Welcome to another edition of A Better You with Coach Caroline. I am your host, Caroline Miller, and today we are speaking with Dr. Roy Baumeister, who is the Francis Epps Eminent Scholar and Professor of Psychology at Florida State University. Dr. Baumeister is the author of many books, including, most recently, The Cultural Animal. Dr. Baumeister is investigating a number of different issues that interest him in particular, including free will, sexual patterns, self-regulation, irrational behavior, and much more. And I'm so delighted to greet Dr. Baumeister as I became hooked on his research while I was at the University of Pennsylvania last year. So thank you for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
Well, let's just jump right in. As I've talked to you about this, I do a lot of work with people, particularly around goal setting and self-regulation, and I've been fascinated by some of your work on ego depletion and the importance of self-regulation. So I'm going to throw you a softball, which is, how would you define self-regulation?
Well, to regulate means to change, and especially to bring it in line with rules and regulations. And so self-regulation is changing yourself to make it more like you want it to be or like you think it should be.
Okay. And then so what is the link between self-regulation or the ability to change yourself and goal accomplishment?
Well, to achieve goals, you've got to make yourself work toward things, and so there's a lot of self-regulation that goes into that. There's keeping yourself on schedule, keeping yourself working toward the task, making sure you work effectively, not getting strayed, sidetracked, and other things, not getting tempted away. So all those things, self-regulation is very much intertwined with goal pursuit in general.
Okay, so it would stand to reason then that anyone who wants to accomplish a goal would have to have some kind of effective self-regulation strategies. Am I right?
That is correct.
Okay. So, you know, this begs the question, what if somebody takes, let's say, the VIA on the Authentic Happiness website and self-regulation is somewhere in the bottom five? What would you say to someone who tends to be, let's say, they've got some self-regulation in one part of their lives, but it's not necessarily high in some of the things they do want to change, like you know, dieting or exercise or even persistence in the face of, you know, wanting to change a job and pursue job interviews?
Sorry, I didn't quite understand the question.
Oh, okay. What would you say to someone who has low self-regulation skills? Let's just stop right there. What if someone's in the bottom five, which
wow.
I understand is kind of a national issue. When you look at the United States, self-regulation and modesty tend to be kind of at the bottom for a lot of people.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's too bad. Self-regulation is the key to success in life, and it's the key or an important key. I would say it's probably the most important psychological trait alongside intelligence, and you can't really change your intelligence, your self-regulation or your self-control. You can change. So that would be the thing to emphasize. That would be the first and most valuable thing you could change about yourself.
So how would you do it? I mean, are there any classic self-regulation interventions that come to mind immediately or that you've heard about or seen personally that have been effective?
Well, no. I think psychology has just been waking up to the importance of self-regulation like in the past 15 years or so. We've sort of been documenting how important it is in everything and studying its effects and how it works. How to improve it is something that people have just begun to ask about. Now, we've done some research on that, and really any sort of daily exercise in self-regulation. Let me back up, actually. There's sort of four ingredients there's to effective self-regulation. There's having the goal or the other standard or other guideline for that you want to meet. So you have to know what you want in the first place, what you want to become. Second, there's keeping track. It's very hard to change a behavior without keeping track of it. You can't regulate your weight or your exercise or anything like that if you don't watch the behavior. And so monitoring the behavior, keeping track of it, that's important, and that's probably the easiest thing to make a quick difference in. So if you're trying to improve on something, keep records. We're a big fan of external monitoring, which means write down on the calendar. If it's your weight, write down your weight every day. If it's exercise, write down whether you exercised. If it's working toward your dissertation, make a note of whether you've got a page written every day and things like that.
Before you go to the third and fourth, why do you think that makes such a difference, that kind of accountability?
Well, as I said, without that, it's almost impossible to regulate behavior. You can't really, either in yourself or anything else, if you can't see, it's like trying to drive without drive without seeing where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
Being aware of what you're trying to change is a crucial ingredient. It's the easiest thing to change, and it works. I mean, I think it's no accident that over and over people find if they start keeping track. My grandmother used to say, if you have troubles with money, write down what you spend your money on. It sounds like
right.
a very simple thing, but it really works. One of my more humorous suggestions is when they have these happy hours, you know, and various states argue, well, people get too drunk, you know, and what should we do to keep people? Well, my suggestion is you should just pass the law and say that the bartender or the waitress can't clear away the empty glasses. Because people sit there and they drink and they kind of lose track of how many drinks they've had. And
right.
alcohol's especially contributed to that. But if you had five empty glasses in front of you, you couldn't fool yourself and say, well, I've only had two. And just the same as if you were written on the calendar that, you know, you did your jogging on Monday and again on Saturday, you can't say, well, I think I went three or four times this week. You can look and say, oh, no, I was only 2 days. I better do better. So,
you really have to measure. Yeah, measuring your progress a la Locke and Latham, it has to be challenging, specific, and you have to have some kind of measurable feedback.
Measurable feedback, yes. Keep a record. You can't fool yourself, and it makes you aware of the behavior you're trying to change, and it makes you more aware of it. There's an interesting study that was just published this year that people who weigh themselves every day are more successful at controlling their weight. And they used to say, oh, don't weigh yourself every day. It doesn't change that fast. You'll get discouraged and blah, blah, blah. But no, it turns out that the people who weigh themselves every day, I forget whether it was losing weight better or keeping it off better, but those, you know, those are both important. And again, it's just a sign that getting more information and monitoring that behavior, that is crucial.
Great. Oh, that's so interesting. Okay, and then you had your third and your fourth pieces of that.
Yeah. The third is the one we've paid most attention to. That's willpower. The fourth is the motivation, how much you want to achieve the goal, and so on. And that's not much has been said or studied about that. But you know, if you don't care, then it you still won't succeed at it. But the willpower one is very interesting. We find self-control works like a muscle, and it gets tired when you use it a lot. It gets stronger. As a result of exercise, although the short-term effect of exercise makes you tired and the long-term makes you stronger. And it looks like it's that way with self-control, too. A little bit of exercise every day in the long run will make you will build strength of character.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
We used to talk a lot about building character and do things you know, set rules for children and so on. And it was really kind of, I guess, my generation of the baby boom who kind of rebelled against all these needless laws of why do we have to sit up straight in school and have dress codes and all these things. But now I think research is suggesting those things do build character. In fact, we had an experiment where we had some people just work on your posture every day for 2 weeks. And so just whenever you think of it, try to stand up straight, sit up straight. This is a simple thing, you know. And then we brought them to the laboratory and gave them laboratory tests of self-control, like, you know, stamina sorts of things. And they showed significant improvements over just 2 weeks. These tests had nothing to do with posture, but it's, again, self-control is itself like a muscle. And just trying to exercise it on a regular basis. So you can do it with posture. You can do it by controlling your language. Try to speak in complete sentences. Try not to use swear words. Try... even in these sorts of arbitrary things, try not to use abbreviations. Use those. We have exercises. Some of the we got from some of the religious exercises, the monks and so on. Well, you're like try to use your left hand if you're right-handed for all day. Open the doors with your left hand. Brush your teeth with your left hand. And if you're left-handed, obviously you use your right hand. But just to break your habit and, you know, be mindful and bring about that change in behavior. That's what self-regulation is changing behavior. So these little exercises you do to make yourself change, even in almost arbitrary ways, they'll build that capacity for making yourself have more strength of character and more self-regulation and the important things too.
I mean, to me, that's so fascinating, particularly just going back to your point about exercise. Could you just say a little bit more about, particularly, I was reading one of your research pieces on exercise in the morning and the kinds of, you know, fallout it had throughout the day in terms of juggling even money management. So could you talk a little bit more about how much exercise might be a good prescription for building the self-regulation muscle, if there
okay.
is such an amount?
Okay, well, let me make clear again, we're not talking necessarily about physical exercise like jogging, any kind of exercise on self-control.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your question, I guess, was how much to do, and, well, it's hard to give an answer like seven. Each time you exercise self-control, it will temporarily deplete your resources or tire out the muscle, and so you'll be a little bit weaker right afterwards. So on a day when you've got important decisions to make or important things to cope with, then you probably don't want to exercise as much. Other times, you may want to do a little bit more. And I think, like physical exercise, what matters is doing a little every day more than doing a whole lot on occasion. We all know, talk about New Year's resolutions and how people make a lot of them and then fail at all of them and then make the same ones next year. Well, to me, that's because New Year's resolutions are mostly self-regulation exercises. I'm going to change in this way. I'm going to read more books. I'm going to be nicer to my spouse. I'm going to lose some weight. I'm going to run miles. All of these draw on the same muscle. And so when you're trying to change all these different ways at the same time, they all interfere with each other.
Mm-hmm.
What you should do is you should make one resolution and keep it,
mm-hmm.
And then make another one the next year. But trying to change in multiple ways, that just doesn't work. It's the same sort of thing. There was just a paper out that confirms, I think, folk wisdom that during exam time, students, at the end of the semester, all their self-control and other domains goes to hell, and they start eating too much, or they start smoking again, and they stop wearing clean clothes and washing their hair and all sorts of other things. They become crabby, which is a failure to control what you say and make yourself be nice to people. Well, that's because this muscle, you're using it, they're using it to meet the deadlines and standards and get their work done, often doing work they were supposed to be doing all semester. And so it's a limited resource. You're using it all to cope with the stress. You can't use it for other things. So what we're trying to do, the way you want to think about this, is strengthen the muscle, increase the resource slowly through mild exercise at times when you don't have these demands on you, and then stop doing these exercises when you've got lots of other things to cope with. So that's, I think, the ideal plan, and a little bit every day is the best prescription.
And so how do you know if your self-regulation muscle is getting stronger?
I don't know how you can test yourself.
Now, the only thing that comes to mind for me is retaking the VIA every 6 months to see if, for example, the self-regulation trait rises a little bit higher in that list of 24. But, as a coach and working with people on goal accomplishment, self-regulation obviously comes up quite often. And some people feel like they have good self-regulation in one part of their life and very poor self-regulation in another. So the question would be, how do you measure progress?
Your question is very good. So you're kind of asking the wrong person here. We have laboratory tests that we do to test people's ability of self-control. And I don't so much trust the questionnaire or self-report measure like the VIA, because people could say, oh, yes, I'm getting better at self-control, and they might even believe it, without any real change. Whereas we have laboratory tests like how long someone can hold your hand in ice water before you pull it out, and needs to be done very precisely. You have to maintain the exact temperature and everything to make it comparable at different times. At present, I don't know of any commercially available self-administrable tests for self-control, but I think you should be able to tell the difference. I mean, we've just been documenting that people who don't know what the experiment's about will show these improvements from these sorts of exercises that we do. And so that's the state of the art. And being able to monitor your own improvement, I don't know.
And probably if you achieve your goals, that would indicate some kind of change in self-regulation.
That would be a very welcome, yeah. And that's the bottom line, too. I mean, who cares if you can hold your hand longer in ice water if you can achieve your goal.
Well, so I have a related question, which is if you learn to have better self-regulation with money, for example, and you start writing down all your expenditures on a sticky note that's attached to your credit card and you go home and you enter it in Quicken every single night, has it been shown that you begin to have better self-regulation in other parts of your life?
Yes, there are not a lot of data, but there are several published studies and some that I've reviewed that are on their way to publication showing that, yes. It's an all-purpose muscle. Strengthening it in one domain will make you stronger potentially in every domain. So, yes, controlling your money will make you better at dieting or exercising or washing the dirty dishes in the sink.
Wow. That's a wonderful thing to tell all my clients as we're going into Lent, is pick something.
Yes.
Pick something that you'd like to, and see what actually happens. Well, here's a kind of an easy question, I think, although I know a lot of people would like to hear this explained. How is happiness actually connected with an improvement in self-regulation?
I don't know of any data on that. I'll tell you what I think. If you improve at self-regulation, also known as self-control, it gives you the tools to be more successful in life, and that can lead to greater happiness. I don't think it has a direct line to happiness. It doesn't necessarily feel good directly. Exercising self-control is often denying something that you feel like having right at the moment that you'd be sorry later for, you know, like not eating the whole big cheesecake. So
no published immediately available research on the direct connection between well-being and improvements in self-regulation?
None that I know of. That is correct.
Oh, that's a fertile area someone can explore.
That is true.
Just a few more. I know you have to go. One is, you know, alcohol comes up a lot in some of the research I've been reading that you've been working on. Tell me a little bit about alcohol and ego depletion or self-regulation.
Okay. Alcohol, this is something I noticed when I first wrote my first book on self-control. It's called Losing Control. And this was just a survey of all the published studies on all sorts of self-control. And one thing that came up again and again was whatever you're studying, alcohol undermined it. So you're studying dieting and people controlling their eating. Well, when they get drunk, they eat too much. If you're studying spending, people trying to control their money. Well, when they get drunk, they spend more money. Drinking also leads to drinking more. Over and over again, it seemed to be involved in everything. My sense is... the most direct way that that works is it interferes with monitoring. That there are some nice published studies by my old friend Jay Hull showed that when people drink, they stop being aware of themselves and they stop keeping track of their behaviors. And so they don't think how this will affect me or will I be sorry tomorrow or what will this do to my reputation or to my bank account. They're much more in this feels good now and let me do what I feel like. And so... remember, we talked a couple of minutes ago about the importance of monitoring, of keeping track of the behaviors that you're trying to regulate. Alcohol turns that off. And even at small doses, it starts to have that effect. Now, there may be other effects of alcohol, too, but that, I think, is the clearest one. And so when people drink, they stop monitoring their behavior, and self-control in almost any domain is likely to get worse.
Would it be fair to say that most substance abuse or the kinds of behaviors that change your mood would have a similar kind of impact on self-regulation?
I don't think so. No, there are all kinds of drugs, and they have all sorts of different effects. We know the most about alcohol because it's the easiest to study because it's legal. And so people do... managed to conduct laboratory research on the effects of alcohol. If you wanted to study cocaine or other things, you know, it's much more difficult to get it, to get permission to study it, and so the effect of the restrictions are just been to limit our knowledge of how those drugs work. And there are multiple kinds of effects, and different drugs appeal for different reasons. So I would not, you could be right, but I would not feel at all safe to generalize from alcohol to other drugs.
Okay, and so, but at the moment, the resources or the substances that people can take in legally, alcohol seems to be one of the ones that's most pervasively associated with, you know, a negative impact on self-regulation.
Right.
Okay, that's a great fun fact. My last question is
violence too. I mean, that's an obvious one. I mean, we've long known that alcohol contributes to violence, and it's the same thing. It turns out it doesn't make you violent, but it removes the inhibitions. And again, the inhibitions are from being aware of yourself and monitoring your behavior and thinking, oh, I shouldn't do that, that's wrong. And so when people are happy, getting drunk won't make them violent, but if they're provoked and they're angry, alcohol removes the self-control inhibitions against doing something violent.
Wow, that's just fascinating. It feels obvious, but it's fascinating to have the research to back it up because, you know, that's how people begin to internalize information and change, in my opinion, and what I see with my clients. But still, it's just when you get drunk, you tend to just not have good judgment is what I think most people agree. But my last question is really a two-part question. What type of person has naturally high self-regulation skills? And do you have any paragons or role models of self-regulation who would be good people for, you know, those listening to this podcast to think of as really, you know, terrific people to internally visualize that person's got good self-regulation skills and why?
I'm not sure I'm going to be able to help you on this one. We have people do differ. Some people are naturally better at self-control than others, and whether they're born that way or made that way is very hard to say. It's clear that upbringing can make a significant difference and that people can continue to improve throughout life and can get worse throughout life. What makes for these differences beyond that, it's hard to say. I mean, I think what looks to me plausible, if thinking about what to do with children and so on, setting rules and having them be consistently enforced, is probably the best thing. There are two meanings of being strict as a parent. One is punishing severely and harshly, and that tends to be counterproductive, if anything. The other is being consistent, so that every time the child does something wrong, you make sure it's punished, and that makes it much easier to learn.
And so that's been shown to contribute to the development of self-regulation among children.
There's evidence pointing that direction. I don't know quite how consistent and strong that is there. I'm not a developmental psychologist, and we haven't looked at that. But that appears to me to be the most consistent with what I do know about that stuff.
It's just huge and fertile and fascinating. And I can't thank you enough. This is, I know that we have to go now, but just wanted to say thank you again to Dr. Roy Baumeister. This does conclude today's podcast interview. If you'd like to hear this interview and others, please check back regularly at www.carolinemiller.com. Click on the Blinking Podcast link to learn more about today's guest, too. And until next time, this is Coach Caroline wishing you a happy, proactive, and successful day.